I'm very excited to be able to teach this quarter on the subject of deception, overcoming the deception of this world. This is going to be an immensely practical class, because really the essence of having a happy life in whatever realm you're speaking of is going to depend upon your ability to detect deception and be able to perceive what is real and what is good. And so this topic is one that actually is discussed a lot in academic circles and other things, other areas. The idea of living in a world where people might deceive us, take advantage of us, that's the world we live in. But biblically, immense emphasis is given here. And so we're going to be emphasizing the biblical side. And by the way, there's just tons of material. I'm going to be able to touch a few things. I think it's going to be an interesting quarter. I think so. I know I'm very excited about preparing the material, some of the research I've been doing. And so this first lesson, we're going to talk about taking deception seriously. First off, let's just talk about definitions. What is deception? This is not very difficult. What's deception? Someone's trying to trick you, fool you. What's that? I heard a voice. Okay. I'm hearing things now. Maybe somebody's deceiving me, throwing a voice there, pretending. But anyway, but it's the idea of lying. It's the idea of distorting what is real, and oftentimes to take advantage of another person. And every realm we live in, we've got to learn how to do that. Let me ask, what happens if we're not able to detect deception? In any realm, give me any illustration, any realm, what if we are unable to detect when somebody is deceiving us? What are some of the consequences, potential consequences?
We're not going to see it as deception. We'll believe it.
Yes. We've all been deceived, haven't we? Sure. Ever somebody you thought your best friend, really loved you, cared about you, led you down a path, and it was not sincere? We've all gone through that. How about, what's the most common areas of deception? The motives, at least. What's the most common areas of motives of deception? Yes.
I think it can sort of range. You can be deceived. The person deceiving you can be doing it for like an immediate personal gain. Like maybe they take something from you and you lose something. But it also can be much more dangerous. You could be deceived into doing that which is wrong. Think about the false teachers in the New Testament that came and perverted the views of all those Christians. They were all deceived.
How do you think you guys are well equipped to deal with deception? You know, one of the fascinating things that I've looked at in deception is sometimes the people who have the best IQ are those who are easiest deceived. Sometimes, you know, we think, well, we've been able to accomplish what we've had to get here to Auburn and to be proficient in our field. But you can be deceived and be very, very smart. The truth is, and this is fascinating, some of the studies I've been doing recently, most of us in most topics make decisions not based upon the facts and evidence, but on other things. It's only the areas that we concentrate on and think about do we really make more careful decisions. And there's a reason for that. I'm going to talk about that, I think, in Roman numeral 1. We'll talk about the typical shortcuts that people use to make decisions. We can't think through everything, every decision, because we would never do anything. And so there's some interesting processes that we have to use in regards to deception. We've got to choose to put some things on the front burner. Obviously, if we're about to spend money, a significant amount of money, we typically will discern that a little more because that's a danger area, you know. There's some other areas, if we've got somebody that's, you know, in the lunch line and they're going to serve us food and, you know, are they trying to deceive us to get the green beans rather than the cabbage? We don't think about that. We don't even consider that person's trying to deceive us, and they're probably not. But I am saying that when it comes to deception, having the wisdom to know when to really look is one of the goals I want, one of the things I want to achieve in helping you, being able to detect it and be able to understand it. Let's talk about salvation. Honestly, the whole battlefield of salvation and damnation is determined by our ability to detect and overcome deception. I find that very interesting, that this is not something casual or incidental. But look at the work of Satan in John 8, 44 through 48. Who would like to read that? Got it on the chart, or you can read it in your translation. Here Jesus is talking about Satan. He's talking about a group of people who think they're the people of God, and they're arguing against Jesus, and Jesus is pointing out where they're at, and they wouldn't recognize it. Deceived people are debating with Jesus in this context. Who would like to read John 8, 44 through 48?
I'll read it.
All right, very good. Here you have a classic confrontation of people who have been deceived by Satan and the Son of God, who knows these people, knows what they're thinking, wants to reach them. The power of deception. Satan's greatest work is deception. He wants to take you and I from God. He wants to destroy as much as he can. And the number one goal he has is to keep you from seeing that which is called truth. And I tell you, for all of us, we've got to be diligent lest we go down this path. This is a path that men can follow. Jesus, earlier in this chapter, in John 8, 31, he says, "Then Jesus said to those Jews who believed him, 'If you abide in my word, you are my disciples indeed, and you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free.'" I'm going to do a whole class on truth. But right now, let me ask this. Why would people be afraid of truth? Truth is accurate. Truth is reality. Truth is seeing things as they are, as God sees them. Why are people afraid of truth?
I think it's because truth often implies that people have to change. It's the issue there. You know, if just knowing truth was that bad, I don't think it's the truth itself that's bad, but it's what truth means to people.
Yes. Truth has a cost if it's to be profited. Matter of fact, is truth painful? Yeah. I've had some really good friends in my life. And I want to tell you, one of the things I'll be talking about later in this quarter is have good friends who love the truth and love you. Good friends at times will tell you unwanted things that you need to hear. And I would say, if you can find a mate who is committed to truth, they're going to tell you things you're not going to want to hear. And that is seeking truth and doing truth. It involves pain and it involves effort. Now, let me ask you this. Why would we be motivated to do that? What is the motivation behind the person to seek the truth, to pursue it at all costs, to go through the pain to have it? What's the reward? What's the motivation? This is an easy one. What do you have when you seek the truth? John 8. What's that? You have freedom. You know God. We serve a God who forgives, who has grace. We have a relationship with God who can build us and make us something. The people who are afraid of the truth are afraid of God, and they don't know God. To know God is to create a character within us that we want the truth. We will pay a price for the truth. And so that is something we need to keep within our character. It's interesting when you talk about the non-Christian being deceived. But those who are Jesus' disciples, you will see an enormous amount of warning and exhortation to take heed about deception. I like Luke 12. Imagine here you are Jesus is speaking to you. The Son of God is working with you, talking to you. And then he says this. He says, in the meantime, when a numerous multitude of people had gathered together so that they trampled one another, he began to say to his disciples, notice this, first of all, the Lord's not given to hyperbole. He's not given to overemphasis, emotional outburst. Here he begins to say to his disciples, first of all, and then he goes on to say, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. For there is nothing covered that will not be revealed, nor hidden that will not be known. What's hypocrisy? Ever dealt with a hypocrite? What's a hypocrite? What is hypocrisy? Speak up. Saying one thing and doing another. It's a form of deception, isn't it? And they lie to themselves and they're lying to others. Why be a hypocrite?
It's easy.
It's easy? You avoid consequences short term. I mean, long term, the terrible consequences. But you're looking at the short term. Can we become hypocrites? Yeah, we can. The commitment to overcoming deception, to being honest, to telling the truth, brethren, it's a huge battle. And some of the significant things about deception is that, we'll do a whole new lesson on self-deception. The worst deception we can have is self-deception. You could lie to yourself about who you are and where you're at, and that's the worst kind of lie. If you can't see yourself, what chance is there for God to help you? What chance is there for you to be able to find God's mercy? All right, we can easily be deceived. Let me jump down to something just out of interest here. Rather than going these verses, I want to show you something just from psychology. I ran across a book last year that was dealing with the election. And this author basically made the point, in politics, the vast majority of voters vote on principles other than facts and reason. And he talks about the reason why oftentimes people vote in a certain direction are completely different factors other than evidence. And he listed, and he talked about a psychologist, Robert Cialdini, and I'm listing some of his material. What are the common shortcuts people use in making decisions? We all do it, by the way. You don't think this doesn't apply to you? It applies to you. It's not a matter of if we do things based on shortcuts. It's talking about which things are we using the shortcuts on, okay? So let's think about this. What things would influence people to make decisions? And I'm going to first ask you to participate, and then I'll try to interpret what the categories this guy puts out. But what are some common reasons why people make decisions, not based on facts? Yes.
Social pressure is probably one of the biggest ones.
Yeah, social pressure and also the herd mentality. Sometimes you call it peer pressure, but another aspect, a different kind of pressure here, is that we like to belong to a group. Now, whether or not you recognize it or not, you all belong to groups. Sometimes we'll look at the color of our skin, and we belong to a racial group, and we can make decisions based on that and kind of join with somebody if our flag is raised. Now, hopefully, we'll fight that. How about in sports? Y'all have a certain team y'all like? Do you see that sometimes in sports? And this doesn't matter. I'll admit to you, I pull for my team. You know why? Because my dad took me to watch the ball games when I was young. And I attached that thinking my dad, and he admired the coach back in the 60s that he pulled for. And you know what? That's okay. it's okay. My children have gone different directions in who they pull for. It's okay in some areas to have shortcuts, okay? But oftentimes we identify with a group, and we're going to defend that group. What's another common area of why we make decisions without thinking about it? Okay. One is called reciprocation. And basically, If somebody's good at this, they can do something for you. They can be kind to you. And you know how we're wired as people? If some people do good thing to us, help us, give us gifts, what do we tend to do? Naturally, we want to give things back to them. And so the skilled negotiator could actually go through a process where they appear to give you some things, and then they get down to the question, they want to ask you to make a decision, and here you are in the goodness of your heart. We're not saying this is a bad thing. This is how we're programmed. There is one French anthropologist. He talks about the nature that we have. There's an obligation to give, an obligation to receive, and an obligation to repay. And so sometimes in an area of deception, a person can appear really nice to you and give things to you, and you really appreciate that. And sometimes they could lead you to say yes to a decision that's not good without thoughts. Any others? There's so many other areas. Any other areas? How about this one? Commitment and consistency. The idea here is you've taken a stand. You've done some things in the past. Don't you want to be consistent? And so sometimes it's not a matter of reason, but it's a matter that I believed in this, I've stood for this, I've done this, and this all lines up, therefore I'm going to do this. Have you ever heard people say this, brethren have always done it this way? We tend to be that way. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I can understand in areas that don't matter, those probabilities are not bad, okay? If we've seen good fruit for what we've done, but I'm telling you, when we make decisions on that basis, we're not doing it on the facts. We're doing it on something else. Social proof. In this case, we view behavior as more correct in a given situation to the degree that we see others performing it. And that's where polls come in. Everybody's doing this. You know, everybody I respect is doing it. Well, you know, if they're doing it, it must be pretty good. Having somebody that's likable. Do you like to tell somebody you really like? No. On commercials, why do we have celebrities do commercials? Why? On what basis do they choose celebrities? They don't go to people on death row and have them do commercials, do they, right? Why do they have celebrities do commercials?
People look up to them.
Yeah, we like them. Do you want to tell somebody you like? No. I will assure you, every one of us, in a large number of decisions that we make, fall in these categories. And the other is authority. We typically do stay within authority. If an authority figure is doing something, we tend to do it. And by the way, in religion, that's why the titles and the garb and the clergy laity distinguishing is so powerful. Some people, they are programmed. Here is somebody in authority. They say to do it, I'm going to do it. And they separate that from reason. So what I'm telling you is this, we all do this. But we need to make sure in the things that matter, we don't let these things become the factors in that which matters. And that requires a conscious choice. It requires effort. And that is where we really, that's the thrust of this class is, okay, how can we do that? Yes.
I think it's kind of interesting. I was looking through those up there on the board. Mm-hmm. But other than maybe the social proof one, I think that there is a lot of... These can all be applied in a positive way, too, especially towards God. Like reciprocation, yes. Commitment yeah. And consistency,
yeah.
Liking authority. Like yeah. Those all have positive merits as
they
well.
They do. And I would say this. If you're not a very strong Christian... And you've got the right relationships. There's some aspects of this. If you've got the right relationships, that will hold, carry you through until you can get to the point to discern. But I'm saying these things by themselves are not enough. And so it's very, very interesting. And you think about this. And by the way, there's some fascinating... I've got like 3 pages of quotes on these areas. It's fascinating to learn about people, learn about yourself. This is the battle. A good salesman, by the way, be careful when you're going into a sales situation. You need to research ahead of time. Let me give you one more area. And this is not as critical, but scarcity. I'm going to give you a bit of financial advice tonight, class. I'm sure at one point you guys are going to go and take the hook, and I'm okay with it as long as you're disciplined. Take the hook of the free weekend at a resort. How many of y'all have seen those? You're going to see them. You're going to see all kinds of offers, okay? And all you have to do is take a $2 presentation. And what you're going to go through on that is they likely are going to try to sell you a timeshare. Now, by the way, timeshares, there's a place for that is reasonable, but not in my world. But what you got to know is that when they do that sales presentation on you, they'll end up trying to make a certain offer, and then you turn them down. And then they'll come up with an offer that is so incredible that you've got to take it now. If you go back to your apartment and you wait, it's not no good. If you walk out of this room, it's no good. You know what that's called? That's called scarcity. If you feel like there's a deal, if you feel like there's something that is scarce, you tend to almost irrationally jump at it. And by the way, if anybody ever does that to you in a sales presentation, you can quote me. Walk out on it and say, if the deal is not good tomorrow, then it's not a deal I'll take today. But see, what they're doing in this is they're playing on your emotions. And so again, deception. Let's go back to Scripture now. Don't be overconfident. Don't think that you're going to be above this, that you're going to be smart, that you're going to overcome. How many of you know the game of chess? That was a game I took kind of seriously in college briefly. And I learned I didn't really know a lot. I did okay in some chess tournaments in college, but if you or I sit down with a grandmaster. The grandmasters could take us and have 60 of us around the table, have 60 chessboards set up, and go and take 5 seconds and make moves and go around the room and beat all of us. When we're dealing with deception, we're dealing with your ability to reason and overcome one who's trying to deceive us. And could I tell you, without God's help, we'd stand no chance against Satan. Satan is a spiritual being. Satan, in my understanding, was created as an angel of God and had a wisdom to him that is far beyond humans. We're told in Ephesians 6 that we're standing against the rulers of the darkness of this age, the spiritual host of wickedness in the heavenly places. We're told in Ephesians 4 that we should no longer be children tossed to and fro, carried about with every wind of doctrine by the trickery of men and the cunning craftiness of deceitful plotting. As a Christian, we've got to learn how to overcome deception. And you know one of the sad things is about churches that start drifting away from doctrine and drifting away from reason? They don't equip their people to deal with deception. We have to learn how to deal with deception. God will provide. God will take care of us. But if you're dealing with Satan, he is unmerciful. And I pray none of you will walk down very far the realm of deception. We've all been deceived. We all make mistakes. But Satan wants to take us down a realm that will destroy us spiritually. In the life of Jesus, Peter confessed that Jesus was the Son of God in Matthew 16. And immediately after he confessed that Jesus was the Son of God, matter of fact, I don't even have this on the chart. Look at Matthew 16. I want to show you. And again, Peter is a great example for us, a good man. Matthew 16, and I'm sorry about the small print. I didn't change the font on this, so y'all have to look this one up. Matthew 16, and you look at verse 18, we'll start there. Who's got Matthew 16:18 to read it? Matthew 16, 18. Okay? Good for Peter, right? Good for Peter. Now, if you would, keep reading. If you would, read verse 21 through 23. You know, Peter loved Jesus. But Jesus is telling him what's about to happen. He goes, no, it's not. Peter, you know, we can get caught up in a stubbornness. We can get caught up in a determination. We want a certain reality to exist. When it doesn't, we're not in a good place when that happens. Now, you know, Peter ended up being a pillar in the church. He ended up being a great blessing. But what event in the life of Jesus did Peter... It's along these lines. Did Peter show a blindness? Remember when Jesus says, you're going to forsake me? What did Peter say?
No, I'm not.
It's
not going to happen.
Now, Peter was an apostle. Okay? Put your name and my name in Luke 21, 22. Listen to this. It says, and the Lord said, Simon, Simon, indeed, Satan has asked for you, that he may sift you as wheat. But I have prayed for you that your faith should not fail. And when you have returned to me, strengthen your brethren. Now notice Peter. But he said to him, Lord, I am ready to go with you, both to prison and to death. Then he said, I tell you, Peter, the rooster shall not crow this day before you'll deny me three times that you know me. Deception. The Lord will allow us to be tested in this life. And it may well be that we've fallen a way we shouldn't. We could go down a path and be sifted as wheat. Here the Lord is being very plain with Peter, and Peter is being very stubborn. And I hope we don't go down a path like Peter, but we might. Learning to see deception ahead of time keeps us out of the realm of Satan. And if Peter was tested and tried, then I want to say that you and I, likewise, are going to go through tests. Before I go to the rest, I want to do some discussion with you guys. How many verses or passages in the New Testament can you think of in your mind that deal with deception and the warnings about deception? You don't have to use my outline. You can use others. They're all over. But let's just talk about a few. Some that you think of. What are some passages warning about deception?
1 Peter 5:8.
Warning about Satan as a roaring lion. His work is deception. We get in his realm when we're deceived. We've got to keep us out of that realm. Yes. Another gospel. You've got to discern. What's another gospel? You've got to learn. Whole book of Galatians about deception. Some other. Yes.
2 Timothy 4:3. Like people having itching ears to find teaching that suits their own passions.
Yeah. Yeah, people having itching ears. I think that's 2 Timothy 4:3. Yes. And here it talks about the... I heard wrong. But anyway, but yeah, here's passages in the church where you get to the point you don't want to hear anymore, okay? Brethren, I don't want to be fearful and negative. I want to talk and just beat you over the head and tell you how bad you are. I want you to hear about the grace of God, the goodness of God. I want to build good relationships. But you cannot have a good, sound, spiritual life without learning about warnings and learning how to discern good and evil. And the churches that have stopped doing that, it saddens me. That they're not going to be prepared. You look at the Jesus' ministry, you look at the writers of the New Testament, we need to have a balanced diet. We've got to be able to discern that which is deceptive. Any other verses? Some great verses. Any others?
Think of the one that says, "If you receive evil company, corrupt."
Yes, yes. And that would be 1 Corinthians 14:33. And there was dealing with, in that context, people saying there was no resurrection. And here, it was associations that was leading to doctrinal compromise. So again, all I've got to say, this is really simple. Let's be willing to think. Let's be willing to have relationships where we are not afraid to be questioned. And you know what's going to happen with us? We're not going to agree on everything. But you know what? Even when I don't agree with someone, I appreciate someone saying, "Hey, let's think about it." And that's what I want. What happens if we run from any disagreement and we don't even want to hear someone to say that we're wrong? What happens to us when we go down that path? Think about it. Have you been around somebody, you can't ever tell them they do wrong about anything?
I think at that point we've deceived ourselves.
What's that?
I think at that point we've deceived ourselves into thinking that we're not human.
Okay. What's the dating process about? Should you immediately marry someone that you have infatuation with? No. What's the dating process about? It's not that the person is necessarily evil, but by the way, you can make some mistakes about the character of a person. The dating process is really a form of discernment, a form of building one another up, a form of learning about the character of another. It's not that you're perfect, but you know, good, healthy relationships are going to be based on honesty. And so as we talk about this topic here, it goes far beyond just the biblical scriptural thing. It deals with every aspect of our life. And so I want to continue to develop this. Next week, I'm going to talk to you about detecting deception. And that's a very interesting study. I did an entire series with a group of preachers a few years ago on this. How do you know when you're dealing with a bad character that's trying to deceive you? That is something that's hard to understand, but you've got to learn how to do that. And so, you think they'll have another bell maybe? Or okay, why they ring it. Okay. Comments or anything on topic? Now, I'll give you a homework assignment. Using your ability to reason and discern, tell me the purpose of this new structure at the back of our classroom. So far, we haven't figured it out. We've had people come in early and ask about it. So that'll be your assignment. We have to learn your reasoning ability. And what could this mean? Why do we have this kind of smaller little, you know, half of a rectangle back there? So, okay. We'll, Lord willing, pick up next week with the second part of the outline.